Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and treat yourself to a glass of cool, refreshing Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry presents Information, Please. We supply a quartet of walking and talking encyclopedias. You supply the stickers to test their range of information. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please is unrehearsed and as free as the wind. At a long table opposite me is a quartet of giant intelligences prepared to answer up promptly. If they do not, Canada Dry will pay up promptly at the rate of $10 for each question muffed, plus $5 for the use of the question itself. Now this evening we have with us Franklin P. Adams, the famous conductor of the New York Post's humorous column, The Cunning Tower, his sidekick, John Kieran, inimitable sports authority and general information bureau, and Russell Krauss, the Broadway playwright, who has just returned from the coast, where he worked on a picture based on the life of Victor Herbert. Mr. Krauss, by the way, is batting tonight for Mr. Rex Stout. Mr. Stout decided he couldn't take it, and he chose an appendicitis operation instead. He's recovering nicely, and we expect to have him back with us very soon, complete with hem stitching. Now, ladies and gentlemen, in addition to Mr. Krauss, we have something a little special this evening in the way of experts. He is the press secretary to the mayor of New York, and he enjoys the further distinction of being the brother of John Kieran. His name is James Kieran, and I predict that fraternal blood will flow this evening over the airwaves. Now, for clarity's sake, this evening we'll abandon formality, and I'll call them John and Jim. Is that all right? Okay, Mr. Adams, Mr. Krauss, John, and Jim. Very well. The first question, coming to us from Clearfield, Pennsylvania, from Mr. Tom S. Stone, is the following. Mr. Stone wants you to give 4 slang expressions that contain articles found in a hardware store. For example, if I should say to you, John, go sit and attack, you'd understand me, and you would tell me in response, perhaps,
you've always got your hammer out for me.
That's a very, very good one.
Very personal.
Mr. Krauss?
Hit the nail on the head.
Hit the nail on the head as well. That's 2. Jim?
Still on the hammer. He's got his claws into me.
Hey, that's pretty good. All right, yes, claw hammer. Very good. That's 3. Mr. Krauss?
You're off your hinge, and that's not personal.
Thank you very much, Mr. Krauss. Polite as usual. That's 4. Let's have 1 more. Mr. Adams?
With mallets toward none.
I predict, Mr. Adams, that will be remembered long after you and I are dead. Unfortunately. Very good. That was 4.5 from the experts this evening. The next one from M. Stevens of Minneapolis, Minnesota, has to do with naming the governors of a number of states. And I think we ought to know the names of the governors of most of our states. Why, for example, shouldn't you be able to tell me who is the governor of California? Jim.
Culbert L. Olson. I may be wrong on the middle initial.
No, you're absolutely right on the middle initial. Culbert L. Olson is correct, and he belongs to what party, Jim?
The Democratic Party.
Democratic Party. The governor.
Once epic.
The governor of Kentucky. John.
Happy Chandler.
Yes, happy to his friends. Albert B. Chandler, belonging to what party, John?
Democratic.
Democratic Party, yes. Very good. You know all the Democrats, John and Jim. Do you know any of the Republicans? For example, can you give me the name of the governor of Wisconsin?
The governor of Wisconsin is Julius P. Heil.
Julius P. Heil, R. Very good. Of Pennsylvania. Of Pennsylvania?
Arthur H. James.
That was Jim again. Don't forget to raise your hand,
oh,
Jim. It's all right. Arthur H. James, what is there after his name? R or D?
An R.
An R. And Texas, finally. Texas. Great state. A big state? Ought to know the name of the governor of Texas. You've heard of Texas, haven't you, Mr. Adams? Death in Texas?
The trouble is, we can't garner that name.
I want to dissociate myself from that. That was Jim Kieran speaking. W. Lee O'Daniel, D. The famous hillbilly. Wasn't he the governor who had a hillbilly band and helped him to get elected?
He's a Harvard man.
Down south. Beg pardon, John?
He's a Harvard man.
Is he a Harvard man, really?
Oh, yes.
A Harvard hillbilly.
I didn't know they learned those things down in Harvard. We were supposed to get 4 out of 5, and we did. Now, please remember W. Leo Daniel, D. of Texas, next time. The next question from L. Peters of New Haven. We'll test your knowledge of literature and of legend. What famous tests in literature were applied in the following situations? What famous test was applied to prove true parenthood? Now, this is a very difficult question. Mr. Krauss.
Well, in the case of Solomon, two mothers who claimed the child, and Solomon's decision was that the child was to be cut in two, and in that way the real mother responded and wouldn't let the test take place.
That's exactly right. Very, very good. You couldn't give me the book of the Old Testament from which that story comes. You don't have to.
Well, I haven't it handy.
No, that's all. I have it handy, and I'll tell you. It's you'll find it in the first book of Kings. Now, what famous test was applied to select the most suitable husband? Famous test in literature to select the most suitable husband. Jim, you got that on the tip of your tongue?
In As You Like It, there was a wrestling match. I believe that was to select a husband, but I'm not quite certain.
If you're not quite certain, I'll turn the whole thing over to John. How about John? Is that right?
No, that's wrong.
I love to see the brothers agreeing that way. Brothers in their little nests agree. The answer is not that one, Jim, but John?
Atalanta and a race. That she conducted for any suitors who came against her. And finally, one of them came with 3 golden apples, and he dropped the apples so that she finally fell behind to pick up the apples, and he won the race and became her husband.
Well, did that test his suitability?
Well, it certainly did, according to her standard.
She got the man.
Yes, there's another very famous test in The Merchant of Venice by Shakespeare. Do you remember John, Jim, Mr. Krause, Mr. Adams?
Casket.
Casket. That isn't enough, you know. Just one word will never do. If you were paid by the word, Mr.
Casket
Adams, you'd
give
a little more. Well, remember that Portia, the heroine of The Merchant of Venice, had 3 caskets, and she had 3 suitors, and Bassanio, the one who finally won her hand, selected the lead casket. Instead of the gold or silver. He thought the gold was too gaudy and the silver was too pale, but the lead was just right. And he selected that casket, and in it, I think, was a portrait of his beloved, Portia, and he won Portia's hand. Things were very easy in those days. Yes, that was the test for the most suitable husband. Now, what famous test was applied to prove or to find out the identity of a man long absent from home? John?
I think that's the case of Ulysses that you're referring to.
Yes, it is. Do you want to tell us a little more about
it? His old blind dog knew him.
Yes, that is true. That wasn't exactly a test. I mean, the dog responded, what should we say, intuitively. But what test proved who Ulysses was before a group of people?
I mean, well, he killed all the fellas who were hanging around his wife.
Before that. I mean, before you get to the bloody part of it, which you enjoy so much, John, tell us, what the test was. What could he do that the others couldn't do?
Oh, he could bend the bow, I think, there was some weapon of war that only he could wield.
That's exactly
it.
And
he wielded it.
That's exactly it. It was a bow. He could shoot the bow, which no one else could handle. That's the famous bow of Ulysses. To wield the bow of Ulysses becomes a proverbial expression. And finally, what famous test was applied to prove or identify a true princess? A true princess. John?
A little P was put under 17 piled-up mattresses. And
20, 20.
Well, all right, 20. They marked down to 17 this week only. and she felt that little glove deal all the way through those mattresses, thereby proving that she was of bright royal blood and not like the rest of us poor peasants.
Right. I've never heard a story more charmingly told. Very good. We were supposed to get 3 out of 4 on that, and that's what we did. So far, I haven't been able to break down the resistance of this quartet of experts. The next question for Mrs. Virginia Dinwiddie of Ellenberg Depot, New York. I'm very fond of this question. I hope you get stuck on it. There are I think you should know the answers, and I'm sure you won't. I want you to quote the opening words of the Bible, the Constitution of the United States, and the Declaration of Independence, gentlemen. I shall be both shocked and delighted if you don't know the answers to them. Jim, all right, to the Bible.
In the beginning?
Go ahead.
Well, how much you want?
A little more.
The Word was God. The Word was God.
No, not quite,
not
Jim.
Quite.
John?
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God.
That is,
closer.
From what version do you get that?
Well, the Bronx version.
Do you have a special version up your way, John? Well, the version of the Bible that I'm familiar with has the words, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." I think that is the most familiar beginning. Now, I'm not sure. We probably have a number of letters coming in from those who know the Bible better than we do. And I'm ashamed of you, gentlemen, for not knowing it as well as anyone else does. But I think that I'll accept, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth," as the first words of the Bible. Now, let me ask you whether you can give me the first few words, oh, let's say 8 or 9 or 10, of our Constitution. John?
I think it's we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more permanent union and so forth and so on, do declare this to be our Constitution.
Yes, that's the form of it. Do you think it would be a good idea if I read the first sentence of it? "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessing of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America." Somehow the boys who wrote those sentences seem to have been writing as if they expected generations after them to read what they were writing. They don't write that way these days.
We hope
now,
they believe it.
I beg pardon, Jim?
I say we hope they believe it.
Well, I hope they do. Now, how about the Declaration of Independence? John?
"When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bonds by which they are so-and-so to another."
Yes, that's approximately correct. I won't go through the whole of it. It's a marvelous first sentence. That's approximately the beginning of it. Well, we got 2 out of 3 on that. The next question from Mrs. L. C. Pfeiffer of this city asks you to identify these famous house numbers in fact or fiction. These are the house numbers. The first is number 1600. 1600. Jim?
1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is the White House.
Is the White House, yes. Occupied every few years or so by a different occupant.
No comment.
Number 50.
You don't give the street?
I won't give you the street, no. Number 50.
Can we make a guess?
Yes, John.
Nobody else want it? Number 50, Baker Street, would that
be? No.
50 Eagle Street, I think, is the number of the executive mansion at Albany, but I wouldn't bet on it.
I wouldn't bet on it either, John. It may be right. That was Jim. I beg your pardon. No, it's Wimpole Street. Number 50 Wimpole Street, where the Barretts lived. You remember when Robert Browning eloped with La Barrett and provided an opportunity for a large number of bestsellers and long-run plays in later years. I think we'll call that wrong, if you don't mind. Number 221B. Number 221B. Number 221B. Does that recall anything to these giant intelligences?
I don't even know 221A.
That was Mr. Krause confessing ignorance.
221B, now, ring Krause's bell.
I'm sorry, John.
That's Nick.
John, if you had only come in on this now, you'd be all right. Baker Street, 221B Baker Street, the address of Sherlock Holmes in the famous Sherlock Holmes stories. That's quite correct. Number one. Very easy. Memorable address, number one. Sorry, gentlemen. Number 1, Pershing Square. It's the address of Canada Drive. That's 3 out of 4 wrong. Out of number 1, Pershing Square, Canada Drive will send $10 to Mrs. L.C. Pfeiffer of New York, plus $5 for the use of the question. Now, so far, we have let $10 only slip away. That's out stump, some having been won by the stumpers of the experts. We'll have a moment with Mr. Milton Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. At this time, I want to describe what many call a picture of solid comfort. The scene in this picture is a veranda, a radio set, possibly one of the new battery-run portables, a small table, and a group of people seated comfortably drinking cool, refreshing ginger ale. Living reproductions of this picture of solid comfort may be seen all over the country this summer, for radio listening has become an important part of our lives. And since ginger ale drinking doesn't interfere with listening, makes it more enjoyable, in fact, it's only natural that Canada Dry ginger ale should be chosen as a pleasing listening companion. Now, of course, drinking ginger ale shouldn't be limited only to this weekly information please time. Reproduce that picture of solid, cool comfort every day, wherever you may be. And when listening to your favorite radio program, drink Canada Dry, the nation's favorite and most refreshing ginger ale.
Cross, your picturesque discourse was delivered in exactly 58 seconds, according to our official clocker. And now we'll go on to a question that comes to us from Hampton, New York, thought up by Miss Brilina Alney. Now, here are four words, gentlemen. Pipkin, gherkin, buskin, and welkin. Define them if you can. Four words. The first is pipkin. John.
A pipkin is a container of liquids. I don't know exactly what the measure is.
Yes, it's a small container of liquids. Yes. Small earthen jar or pot or boiler. That's quite correct. I don't think the word is very commonly used nowadays, or is it, John?
It's archaic.
It's pretty archaic, or on its way to being archaic. Maybe halfway there. Gherkin. What's a gherkin? Mr. Adams.
Bit of a pickle.
a bit of a pickle, yes. It's a small fruit of the common cucumber. A buskin. Jim?
A buskin is an article of human apparel.
Yes? What article?
Pair of pants.
A pair of pants. How'd you happen to think that up? It's exactly wrong. It's a shoe. It's a shoe.
It's a boot.
It's a boot. As Mr.
A
Adams
boot that you wear with a sock.
Ah. That's right, Mr. Adams. And
sock
go on?
And buskin now pitching for Brooklyn.
Correct. Now, Mr. Adams, if you had only come in and given us that in the first place, well, you'd have saved a possible loss. It's an article of apparel, all right, Jim, but it is a high-laced shoe. It used to be worn by ancient actors in ancient Greece. It's a symbol of tragedy, as Mr. Adams is telling you in his mellifluous lingo. Now, a welkin. What's a welkin? John?
Well, a welkin is the sky overhead, metaphorically described.
What is the
make phrase? The welkin ring.
Make the welkin ring, and I must say that until this afternoon, I had never known what that meant. I've been using the phrase make the welkin ring for years. Mr. Adams, are you
shot? Thought it was a bell?
Did you ever hear Welkin, stranger?
I've just heard of it.
That isn't Welkin around here.
That was Jim. That 3 out of 4 is what we were supposed to get. On the Pipkin, Gherkin, Buskin, Welkin question, we did get it. The next one from A. Jackson in New Orleans. What recent news event is brought to mind by the following? I'm going to give you a number of phrases, all involving numerals. 12 straight. What would that mean to you? 12 straight. Mr. Krause.
It's the number of games won consecutively by Atlee Donald, the pitcher for the New York Yankees.
Very good. What makes it unusual? What's unusual about Atlee Donald?
This is his first year in the big leagues.
Yes, he's a rookie. That's pretty good. Would you say that was very good, John?
Yes, except that his first name is Richard.
Well, we're always accurate on this program. His first name, ladies and gentlemen, is Richard. Probably. How did I happen to get the name Atlee?
Because his name is Richard Atlee Donald, and he came up using his middle name. I don't know why. I guess he came up in a hurry and didn't bring it all with him.
He's still Atlee to me. I know that. Now, if I say 6 months, what does that recall to any of you? Nothing personal, gentlemen. 6 months. 6 months. 6 months. This has been in the news. As a matter of fact, it's been headline news.
Gee, a lot of things have happened in the last 6 months, and a lot more are going to happen in the next 6 months.
There's a prophecy for you. But that's not what I meant. It's a specific, 6 months, a specific phrase. The United States denunciation of the 1911 trade pact with Japan will take effect, will it not? In 6 months, they're given 6 months grace, as it were. Well, I have to count you wrong on that, gentlemen. Now, if I say 50 cents to you, what would that mean? 50 cents. A mere 50 cents, Mr. Krause.
The possible reduction in admission to the World's Fair.
When?
I think there's some kick about it now. I don't know when it's supposed to go into effect.
You're about 40% right.
Weekends or something about
that. Yes.
Saturdays and Sundays.
Yes,
so
and it is in effect, I believe. It is the new admission price for the World's Fair on Saturday and Sunday.
Well, I don't get around much.
ADV. I think I'll call that right, Mr. Krause, if that's all right with you.
Well, I'll accept it.
Okay, that's very good-natured of you. Now, if I say 100 Carolina sheriffs, 100 Carolina sheriffs, Jim, what would that mean to you?
100 Carolina sheriffs.
Don't count them. Just let me have them. 100 Carolina sheriffs.
They were seeking some missing person. They ran into trouble. I can't give you the full details.
Well, here are the details, and I think you ought to know this, Jim, considering your job, which is that of press secretary to the mayor. Mayor LaGuardia was guest speaker at the convention of the North Carolina Sheriffs Association recently.
You mean they caught him?
In order to avoid all confusion, in case the mayor is listening, that nasty remark was uttered by John Kieran and not Jim Kieran. Well, 100 sheriffs from 100 counties of North Carolina attended this convention, which your boss, Jim, addressed. Did you know about it, or was it just done on a slide?
No, it wasn't. There were more than 100 sheriffs there.
Oh, you can't trip me that way. Is that 100 in the public prints? Have to call
must
that
be
wrong.
Right.
And that means that A. Jackson of New Orleans is going to get $10, courtesy of Canada Dry, plus $5 for the use of the question. Now, the next question comes from Marion Lockwood, of California. And the question came in a telegram, but didn't have any address. And we would appreciate it if Miss Lockwood, the coy Miss Lockwood, would send us her complete address so that we may send her the check. Her address will not be misused in any way. The
tell her to send it collect.
This question, I believe, was fixed up specially for the benefit of John and James tonight. It's a question which deals with brothers. What brothers are the favorite stars of seamen? What brothers are the favorite stars of seamen, John?
Castor and Pollux.
Castor and
Pollux. Gemini.
The Gemini. By the way, John, do we get our expression by Gemini from the...
I believe so.
What does Gemini mean?
Twins.
Twins.
All right, Mr. Adams, Mr. Kieran, responding in chorus.
Like twins.
Just exactly.
Gemini, we call them.
Gemini.
What brothers played against each other in World Series? Jim.
Bob and the other musel, Irish musel.
Very good. When was that, you know?
1927, I believe.
How about it, John?
No, sir. 22 and 3.
22.
Maybe it was in 21, too.
No. 22. 22.
22, anyhow.
Yanks and Giants, that's right. There was another pair of brothers, I think, that played against each other in World Series just a few years back of that. Remember? Not so famous, I shouldn't think. Yes, Jim?
The Sewells?
I don't know. That may be right.
No.
I have the Johnsons, Doc Johnson and Jim. Would that be right, John?
Spiker Johnson and Doc of Cleveland and Doc Johnson of Brooklyn.
Yes,
right.
That's right. In 1920. Okay. What brothers ran for president and vice president on different occasions? You brothers ought to get together on these brother questions, John and Jim. Mr. Krause.
The Bryans.
Yes. William Jennings Bryan, president, practically any time you choose to mention. And Charles Bryan ran for vice president. What brother was the victim of his brother's skin game? What brother was the victim of his brother's skin
Jim
game?
Jim Kieran.
I beg pardon. Sorry, John.
Esau.
Esau.
In the Bible.
Yeah, brother of Jacob in the Bible. That's right. Pretty good on brothers. Now, the next question from Maudie Hudson of Pasadena, California, has to do with trees. What kind of tree is suggested by each of the following selections, which are now going to be played by the pianist? Let's have the first. Mr. Adams.
The bamboo tree.
Yes, the bamboo tree. That is, of course, under the bamboo tree. Let's have the second, which is even easier. Mr. Adams again.
Christmas tree.
Christmas tree, fir tree.
Fir tree.
What's the name of the selection that's being played? You can give it to us in any language you wish. Mr. Krause?
Tannenbaum.
Oh, Tannenbaum, yes. And let's have the third and last. We don't seem to get that. Mr. Adams?
The palm tree.
Palm tree. What's the name of the selection, Mr. Adams?
The shade of the sheltering palms from Floridora.
Very good. Very good. 3 out of 3. The next one from F.A. Neal of Plainfield, New Jersey. The following stanza occurs in a poem which contains several more familiar stanzas. And I'm going to ask you to quote the familiar stanza, the most familiar one. Now, here's the one which is not so familiar. My fairest child, I have no song to... I beg your pardon?
Oh, go ahead.
Well, John, and neither John nor Mr. Adams will give me a chance to finish the song. I'm going to get the answer first, and then I'll give you the whole poem afterward. Mr. Adams.
Charles Kingsley.
Charles Kingsley, and what's the name of the poem?
I don't know... Be good, sweet child, and let who will be clever.
That is the first line of the more famous verse. That's quite right, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran, Mr.
I'll John, give Kieran? You the one you started to give, if
I
you want.
I have no doubt you will.
My well, fairest child, I have no song to give you. No lark could pipe to skies so dull and gray. Yet, ere we part, one lesson I may leave you for every day.
Very good.
Take up, Mr. Adams.
Now, Mr. Adams. Now, Mr. Adams.
Ends up with song.
Can you go on with Be Good, Sweet Maid, and Let Her Will Be Clever? How does that go on? I want you to remember this, Mr. Adams. Be good, sweet maid.
And end with long, and then that rhymes with song, and that's all I remember.
That's right. No, it doesn't rhyme with song. It rhymes with song at the very end. You're right. Mm-hmm. Suppose I give the four lines. Be good, sweet maid, and let her will be clever. Do noble things, not dream them all day long. And so make life, death, and that vast forever one grand, sweet song. I may add that the maid who took this advice stayed a maid. Now, I think we should announce our total losses for the evening. This little party has cost Canada Dry a total of $20. So, Mr. Cross, a word from you, and then I'll be back with our lineup for next week.
At this season of the year, we all like to get away from humdrum business days and indulge in our favorite outdoor sports. Though ideas may differ as to favorite sports, there is one thing with which we're all agreed. After the games are over, relaxing with long, cooling drinks is the perfect climax. A congenial companion for such happy occasions is sparkling Canada Dry water. It blends agreeably, adding just the right amount of zesty tang. And what's equally important, the sparkling goodness of this fine club soda lasts. Millions of smaller bubbles assure that the final sip will have the same zesty life as the first. The reason for this long life is pinpoint carbonation, an exclusive Canada Dry process. And this long life is the reason that of the many club sodas on the market today, sparkling Canada Dry water is far and away the most popular. So tomorrow, when you order club soda, be sure to specify sparkling Canada Dry water.
And that's where the zest begins.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Thank you, Mr. Milton Cross. And Canada Dry thanks you, Mr. James Kieran, and Mr. Russell Krause for coming down and joining in the fun this evening. Now, next week, we'll have with us our dependable trio, the famous Adams-Levant-Kieran combination. And our guest of honor, hearken attentively, will be one of the most distinguished actresses that America has produced. Tune in next week at this time as we fire questions at and get answers from Ethel Barrymore. Now, to all our listeners, we say, please send your questions along. If you have a stumper, or think you have a stumper, to stump our board of experts, we'll be very glad indeed to get it. There are $5 in it for you if we use the question, and if we fail to answer it correctly, and you see we can arrange that, you win another 10. So you can win $15 in all, which is money in any man's language. Send your letters with questions to Information, Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Among the host of Canada Dry beverages, you are bound to enjoy these summer favorites. Canada Dry Tom Collins Mixer and Canada Dry Lime Ricky, both made with a genuine fruit base and the finest ingredients. No preservatives or artificial flavoring. So for cooling tall drinks with a lemon flavor, insist on Canada Dry Lime Ricky. The family size is economical, costing only 15 cents. This is Milton Cross saying good night, all.